Chapter 4. We stand alone. Treachery in the blood. Back from the dead. Stunned silence greeted Weyland's pronouncement. Shadrach Medjuson of the Sorgol, war leader and bringer of the clans. Fragments of rumour reaching the Sisyphium claimed that the will behind a series of retributive hammer blows against enemy forces throughout the Oakweth, Instar and Momid sectors had been Medjuson's. But Dwell was the beginning of the end. The cornerstone of Medjuson's line, its loss had broken his self-perpetuated myth of invincibility. The shadow network linking the shattered Legion forces told conflicting tales of Medjuson, that he had died on Dwell, that he still fought the traitors, that the sons of Horus had cut his heart out. Now this.
Medjuson, breathed Tyro, almost unwilling to believe it. Are you sure?
The orbicular structures of the Vox encryption match exactly, said Weyland, reading fresh information from the ship's auspics. It's the Iron Heart. It's him. It has to be.
Tyro heard the need in Weyland's voice. It matched his own. The years since Istvan had been harder than any he had known, the hardest that any of the Iron Tenth had known. The death of Ferus Manus had stripped them of every certainty, and this new form of war denied them the greatest strength their genesire had wrought in them. Brotherhood.
They're requesting permission to come aboard, said Weyland. A single Thunderhawk.
Nykona Sharokin stepped down to the deck.
Deny them, he told Weyland. Shut off the Vox.
What? Why?
Shut it off and get us out of here.
Tyro rose from the command throne and said,
This is an Iron Hands vessel, Sharokin. You have no voice here.
The Raven Guard turned to fix Tyro with his oil-dark eyes.
We don't know who that is,
said Sharokin, jabbing a finger towards the fuzzed outline of the Iron Heart on the main viewer.
Yes, it could be Shadrach Medjuson, or it could be an enemy vessel looking to draw us into a trap.
The codes check out, said Weyland. They couldn't be faked. Only a true son of Medusa would know them.
Have you forgotten everything we've done, Sabik? Said Sharokin. We have the Kryptos and can break the traitor's encryption. Who's to say the enemy haven't done the same?
Tyro knew Sharokin was right, but the void within every heart of the Iron Tenth cried out for the Legion to be reforged.
You could be right, Sharokin, he said. But if there is even the smallest chance that this is truly Shadrach Medjuson, we have to be sure.
Sharokin shook his head.
No. We stand alone. We fight alone. That's how this form of warfare works. That's the only way it works.
This isn't the mines of Lycaeus, Nykona, said Weyland.
You're right, said Sharokin. It's not. It's worse. Back in the darkness of Lycaeus, it was easy to know who you had to kill. Out here, how can we be sure?
Enough, Sharokin, said Tyro. Hold your tongue.
Branthon would never allow this, said Sharokin.
Captain Branthon isn't here,
snapped Tyro.
I am. The Sisyphium isn't a democracy, and I will not have you second-guessing my orders. Valent, send word to the Iron Heart. We will receive them in the fore embarkation deck.
You're sure they're dead?
Boomed Ignatius Newman, hefting another corpse into the airlock.
Maybe I should cut their heads off just to be sure.
Tarsa wasn't sure whether the Iron Hand was joking or not. A safe assumption that he wasn't. But the veteran's flash-burned skin and red targeting optics made knowing for sure difficult. Newman was one of the few who had actually witnessed the death of Ferus Manus, and his armour was etched with the names of his fallen battle brothers. Istvan had robbed the Emperor's sons of any desire to smile, the Iron Tenth most of all. At least Tarsa now had hope he might yet live to see Vulcan again. He had no basis in logic for this, save that no one had seen his Primarch fall. That, and the vision of a brother salamander. Precious little hope, but still precious.
Well?
Said Newman, his combat blade half-drawn. Tarser shook his head.
I assure you, Brother Newman, they are quite dead. An autopsy tends to have that side effect. But I agree, even in death, their skin retains a ruddy bronze hue.
Newman read Tarser's words on his optics and grunted in acceptance. He nodded and sheathed his blade. He gripped another body in one iron-sheened arm and dragged it towards the airlock.
Tell me something, apothecary,
said Newman.
Do the Alpha Legion come from a volcanic world like yours?
Nocturne is a hot world, yes,
said Tarser, kneeling beside one of the dead legionaries to examine his blandly nondescript face.
But that is not the cause of my coloration.
It's not?
No, said Tarser. The particular background radiation of Nocturne reacts vigorously with the melanochrome zygote of our Primarch's gene structure to radically alter the skin pigmentation of his sons.
We even recruits from Terra?
Asked Newman.
Every Salamander's legionary, whether he is from Terra or Nocturne, will have skin like mine, said Tarser,
blinking and making his eyes shine crimson.
And he will have furnace eyes like mine.
Newman considered this.
You didn't answer my question,
he said at last.
I cannot answer it, for in truth I know nothing of the Alpha Legion's homeworld, said Tarser.
Nor I. Is that strange?
Strange? How?
I know of Fenris, of Nocturne and Chthonia, said Newman, but I know nothing of the world that shaped the 20th.
Why is that important? Asked Tarser.
Each legion makes its culture part of its war-making, and knowing where a warrior is from helps you fight him,
said Newman.
I have tasted the ice of Fenris, so I know the wild heart of Russ and his rout. Macragge taught me of Primarch Gilliman's practical warriors, but of Alpharius and his sons, I know nothing.
I think the Alpha Legion carefully cultivate that mystery, said Tarser. The only ones I met were maddeningly ambiguous. Every answer they gave spawned two more questions.
Is that why you had these ones brought on board?
Asked Newman. Yes, said Tarser, standing to wipe his fingers on the plates of his armor.
Studying what literally made them might teach us something of what drives the Alpha Legion.
Well, you think treachery was in their blood?
I wouldn't put it as ritualistically as that, said Tarser. But yes, perhaps there is something in their genetic structure that made them more predisposed to betrayal.
Newman shook his head.
It was not blood that damned the Alpha Legion, but actions. Their treachery was inevitable.
What makes you say that?
Newman paused in his work and stood straight.
For nearly two centuries, we cleansed the stars of enemies. But in all that time, did you ever learn what the 20th were doing?
Every war has shadows and those that must fight in them.
Aye, there's truth in that, Atesh,
agreed Newman, tossing yet another body into the airlock.
But foul things hide in shadows, and I do not fully trust any warrior who goes in so deep that he loses sight of his illumination.
Newman slammed his palm on the lock mechanism, and the reinforced door slammed down as amber light flashed above it. He turned and knelt by the body Tarser had just examined.
You don't want this one in there too?
Asked Newman. Tarser shook his head.
I think we ought to take this one back to the apothecarian.
Why? Will his blood not tell you all you need to know?
Not everything. Maybe nothing, said Tarser. Something in his bone structure now strikes me as unusual.
Newman grunted and returned to the airlock, disengaging the safety protocols and twisting the venting mechanism. Warning sigils flashed, and moments later, a short-lived hurricane ripped the airlock's contents into space. Tarser watched through the armor glass port in the inner door as the bodies tumbled away from the Sisyphium. He watched them until the outer door sealed shut. It made no sound, but he felt the vibration of the heavy portal. Tarser considered Newman's cold words about those who made war in the shadows.
Do you trust
Brother Sharokin?
Newman hesitated before answering.
Trust is in short supply, Brother Tarsa.
That's not an answer.
It's the only one I'll give that won't make me a liar.
Brother Sharokin has fought and bled alongside us all.
As I say, those that work in the shadows sometimes grow to love the darkness more than the light,
said Newman, hefting the last Alpha Legion corpse onto his shoulder.
He put a bullet in that bastard Fulgrim's head, so I'll call him Brother I. But he is not Tenth. He has not suffered as we have suffered.
Nor am I Tenth, said Tarsa. Do I enjoy your trust?
Newman slapped a heavy palm on Tarsa's shoulder guard.
You come from a land of fire, brother,
he said, turning and all but marching him from the airlock.
You lived in the light of burning mountains. Aye, you I trust.
Tarsa nodded, but remembered a world very different to the one Newman imagined. Skies darkened by ash, scorched plains swept by cinder storms, and a life lived in the shadows of pyroclastic clouds. Nocturne was a world of shadow as deep as any. The walls of the embarkation deck still bore the scars of the traitor's combined attack before Idris. Bolter impacts and deep gouges from the monsters the Phoenician's legion had unleashed were a reminder of just how hard the crew of the Sisypheum had fought to save their ship. Cadmus Tyro had chosen this particular deck for its symbolism as much as its scale. The captain was toweringly clad in a suit of Terminator battleplate, hung with a cloak of silver steel links. He carried his helm in the crook of his iron gauntleted arm, and his combi bolter hung in a plated sheath locked to his thigh. Wayland couldn't help but notice that the weapon's arming switch was locked in the firing position. Wayland, too, had come in the full panoply of his position, with a blood-red mantle and the articulated arms of his servo harness folded around his midriff. Thematica wore the white cloak of mourning, in honour of the lost Septus Thoic. He had wrecked the aft embarkation deck by flying a defective boarding torpedo straight into the Sisypheum in a bravura display that had earned Tyro's anger and admiration in one fell swoop. Vermana Cyber stood at the head of 15 veterans, every one of whom was armed as though mustered to repel boarders. If Sharokin was right, perhaps they might have to. The Raven Guard warrior did not stand with them, but was surely here somewhere. Wayland scanned the darkest portions of the deck's vaulted roof, but saw nothing, nor had he expected to. Nykona Sharokin had been trained by the legendary Shadow Masters of the Ravenspire. If he chose not to be seen, then he was, to all intents and purposes, invisible.
Here they come, said Cybus.
Wayland looked out through the integrity field, seeing a spot of light moving against the backdrop of stars. He followed its trajectory as it resolved into the angular, threatening profile of a thunderhawk.
Medjuson,
said Tyro, his excitement palpable. That same sense of anticipation filled the deck, a potent sense of longing which Wayland fought to contain. Someone had to remain objective, for there was merit in Sharokin's belief they should remain isolated. Isolation kept them safe, but Wayland knew the iron hands aboard the Sisypheum were slowly going mad. Grief at the loss of Ferris Manus was turning inwards. More and more of the ship's crew were self-mortifying and embracing ever more extreme modifications to their flesh. The crew of the Sisypheum needed this. They needed to know they were not locked in a slow spiral to extinction, punctuated only by brief bouts of excoriating vengeance. The Thunderhawk grew larger until it passed through the integrity field. Wayland felt the momentary breath of equalizing air pressures as the permeable barrier re-established its seal. Heat bled from the gunship's engines, and ice dripped from its frozen surfaces. Wayland ran an appraising eye over the craft, surprised to find that it was one he recognized. Malleus Ferrum. He'd last seen this vessel on 1544. Its scarred hull was pitted with impacts, and the iron gauntlet on its forwards glacis was blast-scored. The time since the war against the Eldar had not been kind. The assault ramp lowered, and the iron hands of the Sisyphium took a collective intake of breath. Vapor condensed from the gunship's interior as a single warrior limped down the ramp. Thematica took a step forwards in shock.
"Gorgon's oath!" he cried. "Septus!"
"Bet you thought you'd seen the last of me, eh?"
said Septus Thoic, his voice hoarse and dry. Wayland's surprise was total. Thoic's armor was burned back to bare iron and scorched metal.
"Ow!"
began Wayland, but before Thoic could answer, another figure emerged from the gunship. He stopped at the end of the ramp and swept his gaze over the warriors facing him. His build seemed enormous, though in truth he was only slightly taller than average, and wore only standard-issue power armor. Black in the main, but scored silver by multiple impacts from solid slugs, mass reactives, and toothed blades. One shoulder guard bore personal heraldry of a coiled silver worm, devouring its own tail. The other, the proud fist of the 10th Legion. A long, twin-bladed snake spear with leaf-shaped blades of porcelain white was slung at his shoulder. The warrior reached up and removed his helmet. The face beneath was a mask of hideous burn scars and augmetics. One eye was red with blood trauma, the other a shimmering blue bionic. He was a warrior ravaged by war and tempered by loss. Yet there was strength in that blood-filled eye, a power and charisma no defeat could crush and no loss diminish. This was the face of a warrior who had tasted bitter defeat, but refused to let it break him. He was every inch an iron hand, and all who looked upon him knew it.
"Permission to come aboard?" asked Shadrach Medjeson.